Zondervan Audio Pages presents Boundaries, When to Say Yes and When to Say No to Take Control of Your Life by Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend, read by Dick Fredericks.
Boundaries, When to Say Yes, When to Say No to Take Control of Your Life by Henry Cloud and John Townsend. Part 1. What are boundaries? Chapter 1. A day in a boundaryless life. 6 a.m. The alarm jangled. Bleary-eyed from too little sleep, Sherry shut off the noisy intruder, turned on the bedside lamp, and sat up in bed. Looking blankly at the wall, she tried to get her bearings. Why am I dreading this day? Lord, didn't you promise me a life of joy? Then, as the cobwebs left her mind, Sherry remembered the reason for her dread, the 4 o'clock meeting with Todd's third-grade teacher. The phone call returned to her memory.
Sherry, this is Jean Russell. I wonder if we could meet about Todd's performance and his behavior.
Todd couldn't keep still and listen to his teachers. He didn't even listen to Sherry and Walt. Todd was such a strong-willed child, and she didn't want to quench his spirit. Wasn't that more important?
Well, no time to worry about all that, Sherry said to herself,
raising her 35-year-old body off the bed and padding to the shower.
I've got enough troubles to keep me busy all day.
Under the shower, Sherry's mind moved out of first gear. She began mentally ticking off the day's schedule. Todd 9 and Amy 6 would have been a handful even if she weren't a working mother.
Let's see. Fix breakfast, pack 2 lunches, and finish sewing Amy's costume for the school play.
That will be a trick, finishing sewing the costume before the carpool picks her up at 7:45 a.m. Sherry thought regretfully about last night. She had planned to work on Amy's costume then, using her talents to make a special day for her little girl. But her mother had dropped over unexpectedly. Good manners dictated that she play hostess, and another evening was shot. The memories of her attempts to salvage the time weren't pretty. Trying to be diplomatic, Sherry artfully told her mother,
"You can't imagine how much I enjoy your surprise visits, Mom. But I was wondering, would you mind if I sew Amy's costume while we talk?"
Sherry cringed inwardly, correctly anticipating her mother's response.
"Sherry, you know I'd be the last to intrude on your time with your family."
Sherry's mother, widowed for 12 years, had elevated her widowhood to the status of martyrdom.
"I mean, since your father died, it's been such an empty time. I still miss our family. How could I deprive you of that for yourself?"
"I'll bet I find out how," Sherry thought to herself.
"That's why I can understand why you don't bring Walt and the children to see me much any more. How could I be entertaining? I'm just a lonely old lady who gave her entire life to her children. Who would want to spend any time with me?"
"No, Mom! No, no, no!" Sherry quickly joined the emotional minuet she and her mom had been dancing for decades.
"That's not what I meant at all. I mean, it's so special having you over. Goodness knows, with our schedule, we'd like to visit more, but we just haven't been able to. That's why I'm so glad you took the initiative."
"Lord, don't strike me dead for this little lie," she prayed silently.
"In fact, I can do the costume any old time," Sherry said.
"Forgive me for this lie, too.
Now, why don't I make us some coffee?"
Her mother sighed.
"All right, if you insist. But I'd just hate to think I'm intruding."
The visit lasted well into the night. By the time her mother left, Sherry felt absolutely crazy. But she justified it to herself. "At least I've helped make her lonely day a little brighter." Then a pesky voice piped up. If you helped so much, why was she still talking about her loneliness when she left? Trying to ignore the thought, Sherry went to bed. 6:45 a.m. Sherry returned to the present.
No use crying over spilt time, I guess,
she mumbled to herself as she struggled to close the zipper of her black linen skirt. Her favorite suit had become, as many others had, too tight. Middle age spread so soon, she thought. This week I really have to go on a diet and start exercising. The next hour was, as usual, a disaster. The kids whined about getting out of bed, and Walt complained, "Can't you get the kids to the table on time?" 7:45 a.m. Miraculously, the kids made it to their rides, Walt left for work in his car, and Sherry went out and locked the front door after her. Taking a deep breath, she prayed silently, "Lord, I'm not looking forward to this day. Give me something to hope for." In her car on the freeway, she finished applying her makeup. Thank the Lord for traffic jams. 8:45 a.m. Rushing into McAllister Enterprises, where she worked as a fashion consultant, Sherry glanced at her watch. Only a few minutes late. Maybe by now her colleagues understood that being late was a way of life for her and did not expect her to be on time. She was wrong. They had started the weekly executive meeting without her. Sherry tried to tiptoe in without being noticed, but every eye was on her as she struggled into her seat. Glancing around, she gave a fleeting smile and muttered something about that crazy traffic. 11:59 a.m. The rest of Sherry's morning proceeded fairly well. A talented fashion designer, Sherry had an unerring eye for attractive clothing and was a valuable asset to McAllister. The only hitch came just before lunch. Her extension rang.
Sherry Phillips. Sherry, thank goodness you're there. I don't know what I'd have done if you'd been at lunch.
There was no mistaking this voice. Sherry had known Lois Thompson since grade school. A high-strung woman, Lois was always in crisis. Sherry had always tried to make herself available to Lois to be there for her. But Lois never asked Sherry how she was doing. And when Sherry mentioned her struggles, Lois either changed the subject or had to leave. Sherry genuinely loved Lois and was concerned about her problems, but Lois seemed more like a client than a friend. Sherry resented the imbalance in their friendship. As always, Sherry felt guilty when she thought about her anger at Lois. As a Christian, she knew the value the Bible placed on loving and helping others.
"There I go again," she would say to herself. "Thinking of myself before others? Please, Lord, let me give to Lois freely and not be so self-centered."
Sherry asked,
"What's the matter, Lois?"
"It's horrible! Just horrible!"
Lois said.
"Anne was sent home from school today, Tom was denied his promotion, and my car gave out on the freeway."
"This is what my life's like every day," Sherry thought to herself, feeling the resentment rising. However, she merely said,
"Lois, you poor thing. How are you coping with all of this?"
Lois was happy to answer Sherry's question in great detail, so much detail that Sherry missed half her lunch break consoling her friend.
"Well," she thought, "fast food's better than no food."
Sitting at the drive-thru waiting for her chicken burger, Sherry thought about Lois. "If all my listening, consoling, and advice had made any difference over the years, maybe it would be worth it. But Lois makes the same mistakes now that she made 20 years ago. Why do I do this to myself?" 4 o'clock p.m. Sherry's afternoon passed uneventfully. She was on the way out of the office to the teachers' meeting when her boss, Jeff Moreland, flagged her down.
"Glad I caught up with you, Sherry," he said.
A successful figure at McAllister Enterprises, Jeff made things happen. Trouble was, Jeff often used other people to make things happen. Sherry could sense the 100th verse of the same old song tuning up again.
"Listen, I'm in a time crunch," he said, handing her a large sheaf of papers. "This is the data for the final recommendations for the Kimbrough account. All it needs is a little writing and editing, and it's due tomorrow. But I'm sure it'll be no problem for you."
He smiled ingratiatingly. Sherry panicked. Jeff's editing needs were legendary. Hefting the papers in her hands, Sherry saw a minimum of 5 hours' work. "I had this data into him 3 weeks ago," she thought furiously.
Where does this man get off having me save his face for his deadline?
Quickly, she composed herself.
Sure, Jeff. It's no problem at all. Glad I can help. What time do you need it?
9 o'clock would be fine. And thanks, Sherry. I always think of you first when I'm in a jam. You're so dependable. Jeff strolled away.
Dependable, faithful, reliable,
Sherry thought. I've always been described this way by people who wanted something from me. Sounds like a description of a good mule. Suddenly the guilt hit again.
There I am, getting resentful again. Lord, help me bloom where I'm planted.
But secretly she found herself wishing she could be transplanted to another flower pot. 4:30 p.m. Jean Russell was a competent teacher, one of many in the profession who wanted the sprinkler system so that the water would fall on your lawn, and if he didn't water his own lawn, he would have to live in dirt. He might not like that after a while. As it stands now, he is irresponsible and happy, and you are responsible and miserable. A little boundary clarification would do the trick. You need some fences to keep his problems out of your yard and in his, where they belong.
Isn't that just a bit cruel, just to stop helping like that?
The father asked.
Has helping him helped?
I asked. His look told me that he was beginning to understand. Invisible property lines and responsibility. In the physical world, boundaries are easy to see. Fences, signs, walls, moats with alligators, manicured lawns or hedges are all physical boundaries. In their differing appearances, they give the same message. This is where my property begins. Things are our own particular load that we need to take daily responsibility for and work out. No one can do certain things for us. We have to take ownership of certain aspects of life that are our own load. The Greek words for burden and load give us insight into the meaning of these texts. The Greek word for burden means excess burdens, or burdens that are so heavy that they weigh us down. These burdens are like boulders. They can crush us. We shouldn't be expected to carry a boulder by ourselves. It would break our backs. We need help with the boulders, those times of crisis and tragedy in our lives. In contrast, the Greek word for load means cargo, or the burden of daily toil. This word describes the everyday things we all need to do. These loads are like knapsacks. Knapsacks are possible to carry. We are expected to carry our own. We are expected to deal with our own feelings, attitudes, and behaviors, as well as the responsibilities God has given to each one of us, even though it takes effort. Problems arise when people act as if their boulders are daily loads and refuse help, or as if their daily loads are boulders they shouldn't have to carry. The results of these two instances are either perpetual pain or irresponsibility. Lest we stay in pain or become irresponsible, it is very important to determine what me is, where my boundary of responsibility is, and where someone else's begins. We will define what we are responsible for later in this chapter. For now, let's look more closely at the nature of boundaries. Good in, bad out. Boundaries help us to distinguish our property so that we can take care of it. They help us to guard our heart with all diligence. We need to keep things that will nurture us inside our fences and keep things that will harm us outside. In short, boundaries help us keep the good in and the bad out. They guard our treasures, Matthew 7:6, so that people will not steal them. They keep the pearls inside and the pigs outside. Sometimes we have bad on the inside and good on the outside. In these instances, we need to be able to open up our boundaries to let the good in and the bad out. In other words, our fences need gates in them. For example, if I find that I have some pain or sin within, I need to open up and communicate it to God and others so that I can be healed. Confessing pain and sin helps to get it out, so that it does not continue to poison me on the inside. 1 John 1:9, James 5:16, Mark 7:21-23. And when the good is on the outside, we need to open our gates and let it in. Jesus speaks of this phenomenon in receiving him and his truth, Revelation 3:20, John 1:12. Other people have good things to give us, and we need to open up to them. 2 Corinthians 6:11-13. Often we will close our boundaries to good things from others, staying in a state of deprivation. In short, boundaries are not walls. The Bible does not say that we are to be walled off from others. In fact, it says that we are to be one with them. John 17:11. We are to be in community with them. But in every community, all members have their own space and property. The important thing is that property lines be permeable enough to allow passing and strong enough to keep out danger. Often, when people are abused while growing up, they reverse the function of boundaries and keep the bad in and the good out. When Mary was growing up, she suffered abuse from her father. She was not encouraged to develop good boundaries. As a result, she would close herself off, holding the pain inside. She would not open up to express her hurt and get it out of her soul. She also would not open up to let support from the outside in to heal her. In addition, she would continually allow others to dump more pain into her soul. Consequently, when she came in for help, she was carrying a lot of pain, still being abused and walled off from support from the outside. She had to reverse the ways her boundaries worked. She needed fences that were strong enough to keep the bad out, and gates in those fences to let out the bad already in her soul and let in the good she desperately needed. God and boundaries. The concept of boundaries comes from the very nature of God. God defines himself as a distinct, separate being, and he is responsible for himself. He defines and takes responsibility for his personality by telling us what he thinks, feels, plans, allows, will not allow, likes, and dislikes. He also defines himself as separate from his creation and from us. He differentiates himself from others. He tells us who he is and who he is not. For example, he says that he is love and that he is not darkness. 1 John 4:16-16. In addition, he has boundaries within the Trinity. The Father, the Son, and the Spirit are one, but at the same time they are distinct persons with their own boundaries. Each one has his own personhood and responsibilities, as well as a connection and love for one another. John 17:24. God also limits what he will allow in his yard. He confronts sin and allows consequences for behavior. He guards his house and will not allow evil things to go on there. He invites people in who will love him, and he lets his love flow outward to them at the same time. The gates of his boundaries open and close appropriately. In the same way he gave us his likeness, Genesis 1:26, he gave us personal responsibility within limits. He wants us to rule and subdue the earth and to be responsible stewards over the life he has given us. To do that, we need to develop boundaries like God's. Examples of boundaries. Boundaries are anything that helps to differentiate you from someone else, or shows where you begin and end.
Here are some examples of boundaries. Skin. The most basic boundary that defines you is your physical skin. People often use this boundary as a metaphor for saying that their personal boundaries have been violated. He really gets under my skin. Your physical self is the first way that you learn that you are separate from others. As an infant, you slowly learn that you are different from the mother or father who cuddles you. The skin boundary keeps the good in and the bad out. It protects your blood and bones, holding them on the inside and all together. It also keeps germs outside, protecting you from infection. At the same time, skin has openings that let the good in, like food, and the bad out, like waste products. Victims of physical and sexual abuse often have a poor sense of boundaries. Early in life, they were taught that their property did not really begin at their skin. Others could invade their property and do whatever they wanted. As a result, they have difficulty establishing boundaries later in life. Words. In the physical world, a fence or some other kind of structure usually delineates a boundary. In the spiritual world, fences are invisible. Nevertheless, you can create good protective fences with your words. The most basic boundary-setting word is no. It lets others know that you exist apart from them and that you are in control of you. Being clear about your no and your yes is a theme that runs throughout the Bible. Matthew 5:37, James 5:12. No is a confrontational word. The Bible says that we are to confront people we love, saying, "No, that behavior is not okay. I will not participate in that." The word no is also important in setting limits on abuse. Many passages of Scripture urge us to say no to others' sinful treatment of us. Matthew 18:15-20. The Bible also warns us against giving to others reluctantly or under compulsion. 2 Corinthians 9:7. People with poor boundaries struggle with saying no to the control, pressure, demands, and sometimes the real needs of others. They feel that if they say no to someone, they will endanger their relationship with that person, so they passively comply, but inwardly resent. Sometimes a person is pressuring you to do something. Other times the pressure comes from your own sense of what you should do. If you cannot say no to this external or internal pressure, you have lost control of your property and are not enjoying the fruit of self-control. Your words also define your property for others as you communicate your feelings, intentions, or dislikes. It is difficult for people to know where you stand when you do not use words to define your property. God does this when he says, "I like this and I hate that," or "I will do this and I will not do that." Your words let people know where you stand and thus give them a sense of the edges that help identify you. "I don't like it when you yell at me," gives people a clear message about how you conduct relationships and lets them know the rules of your yard. Truth. Knowing the truth about God and his property puts limits on you and shows you his boundaries. Realizing the truth of his unchangeable reality helps you to define yourself in relation to him. When he says that you will reap what you sow, Galatians 6:7, for example, you either define yourself in relation to that reality or continue to get injured if you try to go against it. To be in touch with God's truth is to be in touch with reality, and to live in accord with that reality makes for a better life. Psalm 119:2-45. Satan is the great distorter of reality. Recall in the garden when he tempted Eve to question God's boundaries and his truth. The consequences were disastrous. There is always safety in the truth, whether it be knowing God's truth or knowing the truth about yourself. Many people live scattered and tumultuous lives, trying to live outside of their own boundaries, not accepting and expressing the truth of who they are. Honesty about who you are gives you the biblical value of integrity, or oneness. Geographical distance. Proverbs 22:3 says that, "The prudent man sees the evil and hides himself." Sometimes physically removing yourself from a situation will help maintain boundaries. You can do this to replenish yourself physically, emotionally, and spiritually after you have given to your limit, as Jesus often did. Or you can remove yourself to get away from danger and put limits on evil. The Bible urges us to separate from those who continue to hurt us and to create a safe place for ourselves. Removing yourself from the situation will also cause the one who is left behind to experience a loss of fellowship that may lead to changed behavior. Matthew 18:17-18, 1 Corinthians 5:11-13. When a relationship is abusive, many times the only